That's why we're here.
Hello, dearly beloved, and welcome to the Inside Games Cast. We gather here today to mourn and celebrate Rooster Teeth Productions. And lest we get accused of cashing in on a tragedy, we are last in line at the podcast buffet here. So we waited. Okay.
It's true.
And also, our channel is not going to become a Rooster Teeth clickbait cash in. This is going to be it. I'm joined here.
Unless this does well.
Yeah. If it does a lot of views, sorry to say, that's going to be.
Every week we're going to do a Rooster Teeth eulogy? Okay.
No way.
How many weeks in can we get before we devour ourselves? Speaking of, joined by Bruce Green, and the contract came through this morning. The agent signed off on it. The legend is here. We got him. Brian Garr.
Hey, and I do have a Rooster Teeth hoodie on in memoriam.
I'm wearing a Rooster Teeth shirt. Oh, it's a Funhouse shirt, but I'm wearing a Funhouse shirt. Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn, I got a jacket I could go put on, but I don't want to start sweating. It's unusually hot today. Yeah. Also, there was somebody was running a weed whacker outside, so I had to close the door. Tragedy.
Oh no.
And also, to throw back to a previous point, to make sure we're extra covered, morally and otherwise, we are not even going to be in the business of negativity. We are joining here today to share some happy stories and try to remember our time there as best we can and celebrate memories along with you, the viewer / listener. So that's it. Hopefully we're coming. I mean, I guess we owe a round just to get it off our chests. I don't know. Do you guys have anything left to say that hasn't already been said, or I don't know, anything you want to say about what's going on?
Man, I want to hear Brian. I want to hear what Brian has to say. Because Brian, you were at Austin proper. You were like Lawrence and I were. We were at our, you know, the Red Satellite office in Los Angeles. But yeah. you were there in it. So I'm curious to see what happened.
It definitely for me. I mean, you know, I was there almost 6 years, and the thing that I'm really gonna miss is the community of Rooster Teeth people in Austin, because. You know, like a couple weeks ago, just did a stand-up show with Armando and Andrew Rosas and some people, and then had them on my show. I run into Eric Bador all the time, like at indie wrestling shows around town. And so, you know, it's a bummer. Like if, you know, because when these things happen, people kind of scatter to the four winds and all that. So I miss that. And just for Austin, Rooster Teeth was such a hub for creatives, you know, for people, you know, there's not the opportunities here that it, you know, obviously in an LA or something like that. So Rooster Teeth forever has just been a big, big, you know, so many stand-ups I know, friends of mine have done, you know, little contract jobs at Rooster Teeth. They always paid well, you know, so it's just, And just getting creative people around. It's, you know, and Austin has other outlets, but Rooster Teeth was a huge part of that, of the Austin film scene. Just so it's going to be a huge, massive loss for Austin. And it's just a bummer, you know, in addition to obviously, you know, I still, as you guys do, I still have a ton of friends there who work there, and you hate to see people lose their livelihood. So yeah, it's just, it's sad. It is a bummer. I'm glad we're going to talk about happy things, but it's, you know, I've talked to a lot of people in the last week, just kind of, you know, reached out to people like, hey, are you all right? If you need anything, you know, let me know. So it's a bummer. And, you know, I know people will go on and do their own things, but, you know, Rooster Teeth was definitely a big gravitational pull here.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. What's the fallout been locally, if you don't mind commenting on it?
Sad.
Yeah, well, that's about like, right.
Just a bummer. I mean, you know, it because I do give Rooster Teeth credit for staying. You know, I feel like it's kind of like this happens a lot in the Austin tech scene, and I used to cover it, but companies would get big, they would sell, they would relocate. And so, you know, but when you have like a Rooster Teeth or like Dell before, I mean, Dell created a whole tech industry in Austin. And there was also kind of other things, but you know, the fact that they stayed, they put their headquarters here. I mean, that's a huge, that becomes a big employer, all this stuff. RTX was always a big deal. So yeah, I mean, it sucks. Austin is definitely, changed a lot over the last few years. I mean, kind of, especially post COVID, and this is definitely going to be another blow for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in an attempt to segue into more happier moments, I do have a very happy moment that I'd like to share, and it relates to Austin. I remember when we got hired, we were out in LA for a while, but our very first trip to Austin, I think we landed, it was super late at night.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, and as we were coming down the escalator, Barbara was there, Barbara Dunkelman, to meet us with flowers.
It was the nicest thing ever in the world, yeah.
Yeah, I remember just being so blown away, and it meant so much to me that I still remember it to this day. Yeah, there was, yeah. I mean, sheesh. It goes without saying that nobody at the companies we worked for previously ever did anything remotely as as heartfelt and kind as that. And I was like, man, it was at night, so, you know, she wasn't on the clock or anything. So it was just a really heartfelt gesture that immediately made me feel welcome and accepted. And that was really, really nice.
This is like, speaking to Brian and to Lawrence's points, it's, and we said this before, but I'll keep saying it. All the people that are losing their jobs here that we're worried about, these are the people that we liked working with. Right. And honestly, like, these are the people that kept the company afloat. Like, they were the ones that did the hard work. They were the ones that were there grinding every single day. And they are the ones that are extremely talented. And it's like Eric Badur, for example, is just a fantastic, just, he cracks me up every time I talk to him. Like, he's the best. So,
best. Yeah. He's the only good person in social media. There's like five good posters. Yes. Like two of them at least.
It's true. It's just one of those things where, like, the more that I think about it and the more I'm sad to see all of these people, like you said, get scattered to the wind. I mean, like, I'm sure they'll, you know, people will form other groups and they'll do better things down the line. Mm-hmm. But this is always a bummer when this happens. Again, I've been laid off so many times at this. So I know how it goes, and it sucks. And it always leads to better things. Well, not always, but most of the time. And I really do think that it will for the people at Rooster Teeth. But it's just, the Barbara story is a perfect example of just the fact that she was just there to do something nice for us. That was it. She was excited to meet us and hang out with us. This wasn't because, like, she was obligated, or she wasn't sitting there with flowers being like, fuck, you know, like, no, she was super stoked. And, you know, we were stoked to be there. So it was, I don't know. It speaks to the employees of Rooster Teeth.
Any other job I would have had, they would have been like, we got to take these flowers out of your paycheck, by the way.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Oh, man.
I'm sorry, Lawrence.
I just want to put a real quick bookmark in what Bruce was talking about. The frustration about how, you know, good people who do good work can't seem to find a foothold. We will talk about that in a bit later. Basically, the business practicalities of where the media space is at and how we're trying to navigate it right now. And hopefully some kind of vision for the future where all of these good people can find good work and keep connecting with the communities they're so good at. But that'll be after we get some more amazing stories. Okay, sorry about that.
Brian, do you have any positive, happy stories?
Oh, yeah. Speaking of Austin, like, one of my favorite memories of Rooster Teeth, just top ones, was drinking beer with community members at RTX. I remember the first one I went to, it was... I don't even think I was on a panel, but I was there because I was with the No and all that. And I think the panel ended and Ashley Jenkins was like, let's just go to a bar across the street. And so we just had the people just kind of, you know, I don't know, followed us or realized they were there. We were there and just spent, you know, hours just hanging out with them. I bought many people drinks. And just like, it was fun talking to people. Like, people wanted to know all kinds of things, you know, a lot of, how did you get into this? Like, do you have any career advice? And I never minded like talking to, like, yeah, here's what I did. I don't know if it'll work for you, but work in newspapers a long time and then do a failed local TV show and then somehow fall into this. So that's my career arc. But yeah, just like, it was fun. And then I remember the next year, a RT fan came up to me and goes, yeah, you got me really drunk last year. I was supposed to go watch Spider-Man with friends, but I had to go back to the hotel. He was like, that was awesome. I was like, yeah, it was fun. It's like, I didn't mean to. I'm sorry.
And so many happy memories from RTX.
I know.
Yeah, getting to meet a lot of very kind, enthusiastic people. Really interesting to talk to.
I was just thinking that most of these stories for me sort of revolve around that, meeting the community members, going to conventions or whatever. I kind of have countless happy stories that I could tell. One of them specifically is very similar to Brian's story, which was, it was RTX Australia, I want to say, RTX Sydney, where there was, we had a little funhouse meetup, and we're like, oh, we'll go to a bar and meet and do a funhouse meetup outside of the convention, so that way people don't have to pay to, you know, whatever, meet. And we show up to this bar, and it's literally packed full of people. I mean, like, every single person at every table was there for the meetup. And I show up and I was like, oh, you know, there'll probably be like 20, 30 people, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was the entire place. And they're like, okay, well, go. And we just like literally just cycled around each table. And we probably did shots with every table. We probably, you know, we probably had beers. It's like one of those things where like we couldn't sit down and talk long enough because there were so many people. And I just remember being so excited because, again, the people in Australia, they don't see as many RTX, you know, Rooster Teeth, mm-hmm. Funhouse people as the people in Austin or in Los Angeles or whatever else. So for them, it was really exciting. And for us, it was really exciting. And that night was just fantastic. I just remember being like, wow, people are really excited about what we're doing and also just this community in general. And it was an absolute blast. I have like unlimited stories to tell about these meetups because every meetup was great. There wasn't a time that I went to these meetups and it was just like, oh, even, you know, I can even tell these stories. We used to do, so for RTX, they would do, every RTX, they would do a VIP meetup. And Lawrence remembers these. I'm sure, Brian, I don't know if you ever went to these VIP meetups, but
I was not invited to those. No.
That's too bad.
Regular IP.
You should have been. Because these were basically what they would do is people would pay extra and then they would go to a bar and we would show up for the RTX VIP meetup. And then we would just, you know, again, wander around and like have drinks and talk to people. The VIP meetups early on at these RTXs were crammed. I mean, like we were like in the smallest places with the most people and they would put us in the center of a crowd and then we would all just stand there and stare at each other. It was the weirdest thing. And even those meetups, because I remember I would always hear people be like, oh man, these VIP meetups are always so crammed. Like it's like nobody has any space. I feel like we're all getting sick, you know, like that sort of thing. I loved them. I used to go and be like, this is great. I don't mind crowds. I don't mind people. So I'd stand in the center and be like, all right, let's drink and talk. And I loved that. So even those meetups, which were definitely uncomfortable for everybody there, I was having a blast. So
I can't remember the one specific. There was one meetup that was at a venue that was basically just a dirt field and a stage. But I do remember basically the entire place being filled with people. And the second I rounded the corner, and then like my entire field of vision was people who like looked immediately and it like fixed eyes on me. And there was like a recognition across the room. That's and so it was cool. Terrifying is not the right word. Exhilarating, maybe. I get a little twinge when I'm around crowds a little bit. So that was a hell of a thing. And then just wading into that and kind of letting the crowd flow, take me wherever it wanted. It's almost like crowd surfing in a way. The only downside was going like 4 hours shouting over club music with no water. I brought that up and then they had like runners taking water to everybody at the next event. So it wasn't a huge deal, but yeah, physical rigors for sure. On those RTX weekends.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was one of those where I definitely remember thinking at the time, this will never happen to me again.
Like, yeah, me
this
too.
Is like, enjoy this. It's, this is only going to happen right now. Like, that's this right. isn't what your life is going to be like.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was so, everyone was always so nice. And I remember they would, I think you did, Lawrence, during Inside Gaming, like you were like, okay, prepare something, like, you know, we're going to meet for one of those RTXs, or we were trying to get something going. I didn't know what to do. So I just brought my Switch and just was racing people in Mario Kart.
Oh, nice.
And it was great. Like they loved, like people were just, you know, and you're meeting people and then, yeah, it was so much fun and this is kind of a separate memory, but working at Rooster Teeth in general, it was the first job I had had that you're just working with a lot of people who have very similar interests to you. And that was really fun. Just other nerds. And so like, I remember when it was the No and the Switch came out. So this would have been 2017 and we all got one because we all, you know, it was huge when it launched. Yeah. And so we were all playing Breath of the Wild at the exact same time. So it was I love it whenever one game kind of has the zeitgeist, you know, I guess Baldur's Gate 3 recently, but like everyone's playing it. So like every morning you would come in and, you know, I'd be talking to like Mika Burton or Eddie Rivas or who, you know, where are you? Okay. Oh, I don't know how to get past that. And, you know, swapping notes, such fun.
Mm-hmm.
Intoxicating. Basically been trying to recreate that environment ever since.
It's like a big playhouse. And like, I remember very distinctly, like somebody came up to me, I forgot who it was. It might've been Josie. And very seriously goes, hey, I heard you're starting to watch Mobile Suit Gundam. I have some recommendations.
and then the conversation lasted 7 hours.
Totally. Right? But it was big news when I don't know who I had told this to, but it was so much fun.
Brian, to your point, whenever that would happen at like Rooster Teeth offices, even in Funhouse in Los Angeles or out in Austin, I always thought to myself, this is not going to last. That's what I would, every time I was like, this is a thing that just doesn't happen very often and maybe will never happen again. It was a very interesting time and it very well could. I mean, like, I'm not saying that it couldn't, but it just, at those times you sort of learn to cherish the memories and live in the now, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. I was grateful, I think, for being like, a little bit older. So I kind of knew, you know, what, not like yelling at a cloud, but sort of had a little bit of perspective of like, jobs aren't always this fun.
Right.
You know, they just aren't. Yeah. And and no job is fun all the time. You know, there's always stuff that you're like, but just some really good memories.
And speaking of once in a lifetime things, Bruce, remember when we got to go on tour?
I tried to sleep on a
bus and everything.
I think about it all the time. That was awesome. That was, again, same deal where we got to connect with the community, right? They would show up and perform for people that I was like, wow, these are real people behind those numbers that I see on YouTube. Like that's always the thing that I would relate. That tour was really, really awesome. It was something again that I was like, this will never happen again. And I was right. But it was terrific, and it was a thing I will always remember.
One of my favorite production aspects of that was the wrestling bit that we did. We had like
much fun. So much fun.
We had a different like stunt or spot prepared for every stop. We were hoping that people would like record them live and then start sharing them. I think some people did. Some people caught on, but yeah.
Yeah.
We brought along a bunch of stunt props and stuff. So I got to get hit with a stunt cinder block. So that was like a life goal. And powerbombed through a table. Oh man. Yeah. Actually, it was a suplex, but yeah. Those are very cherished memories. And being able to do that in front of a live crowd. I mean, that's like, or even the wrestling doc. Those are physical things that I thought would just never, ever be part of my life experience. So that's very much completely because of the Rooster Teeth Production Network and the support we received there. So cherished memories that I think kind of to your point, Brian, now that I'm older and have had those experiences has equipped me very well to work independently now.
Yeah, I remember watching the wrestling doc and thinking, ooh, Lawrence is a wrestling fan. Like, I got to talk to him about this. Like, I don't know, like, and like going to E3 was, I don't know if fun was the right word because it was always like a ton of work. And it's, but
there's
but
another like, E3 that people seem to have gone to that I never attended. But yeah, that was my experience too.
I remember Eddie Rivas, another writer, going, hey, let's go walk the floor. Let's at least take 30 minutes or an hour and go walk the floor and just see, like, Nintendo would have this crazy exhibit that was like an amusement park in itself. And I just remember at one point I looked and these people were there was this crowd gap, you know, like in high school when a fight was about to break out and people would like, and you're like, something's going, and I finally get in to see what it is. And it's someone dressed as Crash Bandicoot and someone dressed as Sonic the Hedgehog and they're shaking hands.
Oh, I thought they were fighting. Oh,
historic moment.
And everyone's like,
tungsten bulbs going off.
It's totally like, you know, when the president would shake hands with a formerly hated dictator or so, you know, something was, and everyone's taking pictures and yeah, they're really hamming it up. It was the funniest thing.
Peace in the video game kingdom.
Totally. Oh my gosh, that's so stupid. I love it.
Oh, and there's one thing that Bruce did pretty often, and it became one of my favorite things where this is disconnected from E3, but sometimes we'd all come into the office on a random day and Bruce would just go around being like, stop it. We're all going to Disneyland or to Universal.
Oh, my favorite thing to do, by the way. I loved it. I planned for weeks or months for some of those. Yeah, I love those.
Yeah, it was great. And I remember one day in particular because we went indoor skydiving, which was awesome. And then we just like got a bunch of drinks at a bar and then watched Dracula Untold, which is the perfect movie to watch with friends while you're drunk. Yeah. So it was a perfect day. And I actually remember there was like a moment at the end of the film. And I remember James recounting this specifically. There was like a sun coming up, but that's also exactly the time we started to sober up. So we're just like, having made it through Dracula Untold and then also the lubricating alcohol exiting our systems.
It was now you got the headache. Yeah, the hangover headache, and you're still awake.
The numbment, whatever that word is.
Yeah. Oh, man.
But yeah, that was a great time. Yeah. Those moments, kind of like living in the moment, like you said, I remember being grateful that even though we worked really, really hard, that Bruce was still out there trying to make things fun and keep things spontaneous.
I tell you what, it was like one of those things where, like, you're right, Lawrence. I don't know that I can speak to what you did out there. I know that you worked hard. I just, at Funhouse, we were just constantly going. It was just like a nonstop, always. I mean, like, you know, lots of evenings and weekends and stuff and all sorts of crazy stuff we were always doing. And those are some of my favorite things because I was also really excited to get out and hang out with everybody there because I liked everybody. You know, like that was like the whole point was that the people that I worked with, we obviously had to work together. But at the same time, when I would get to go and do fun things with everyone, that was maybe the most fun because then we actually got to hang out like people.
You know, like, right. You don't have to be worried about content for a few hours.
Not to mention that I was managing everybody. So that was also a nightmare because then. You'd have to make content with people that I then afterwards would be like, hey, this edit wasn't as good as black. And I was just like, want to just shoot myself. Because I was just like, this is the worst.
Yes.
I just want to hang out with people.
Totally. It was so, even kind of toward the end of my time there, and a lot of that was, you know, during COVID or like when Charlotte and Patrick came on and I was doing a lot of stuff with them. With IG and Autumn, when Autumn was running it for a little while, like we could kind of do whatever for better or worse. And like one time we were, and I think this was after Lawrence, I think it's after y'all left, but we had to do some ad for Blade. Like it was streaming on HBO Max and it was just, you know, a promo, but it was a promo that like we were going to act out something. And so we were all going to dress up as vampire hunters and, it's COVID, so we're all in our, you know, apartment, you know, in our house or whatever. And so everybody's kind of getting out little toy swords and a gun and, you know, whatever. And so I just remember going out in the backyard and getting my shotgun and I just southerned it up. I was like, ooh, wait, let's go hunt some vampires. And like, that's what all the comments were about, that I had used an actual shotgun in the video.
Oh man, that's amazing.
Just stuff like that. Doing Ship Hits the Fan, the podcast with Charlotte and Patrick, and having the opportunity to just kind of help to create something from the ground up. I think it was their idea, like the maritime disasters, but to kind of work through it and iterate on it. And it became, you know, it wasn't some runaway success, but I mean, but then people would start sending us stuff from all over, and like it got its own little following, and working with those two was so much fun. Just so good.
Yeah.
There's a lot of constructive people throwing out dumb ideas, and then people just grab them and run with them. The best things happen when no one's watching, kind of like you said, Brian. In some ways, I do remember back then seeing a lot of speculation about the level of corporate oversight or anything like that that might be guiding the content. There was none. In the best possible way. We pretty much just got to do whatever we want and upload it right to the internet. I think as long as, like, we didn't get strikes on the channel or anything, and I think as long as we were fine there, it was fine in general. So I got to get away with a lot. And I don't necessarily mean like dangerous stuff, but just impulsive stuff. This is a dumb idea that I think is fun. Let's just do it. You do it. It's there. And it can actually make it to live out on the internet versus getting scrutinized by teams or managers or suggestions and alterations and stuff. It's just what makes it better. Okay, let's get it out and move on to the next thing.
That's right. Yeah, it's I think I said this in our Inside Games episode, but again, the people that were like in charge of Rooster Teeth never ever limited us. It wasn't like Bernie or Matt or whoever. They didn't come to us and be like, this video is bad, or like they didn't say like, you can't make a video about this. I want to say that might have happened once in my time there for 5 years, and we made thousands and thousands of videos. There might have been one time where they're like, and that was probably a promo for Rooster Teeth or something, you know. So to their credit, that really didn't, that was never an issue. And that was pretty great. I mean, like, honestly, that's pretty amazing to have your bosses not really worry about what you're making, as long as sort of everything is, you know, sailing by and you guys are profitable and making money. Hey, whatever, keep it going. So that was cool.
Yeah, I was like, never to your point, Lawrence, about, yeah, corporate oversight. Like, I was never ever at Rooster Teeth like working on the main product. Like, it's not like I was ever like working on Ruby or like, you know, Achieve or any of like the real bit. I was always kind of on like, you know, Inside Gaming or it was kind of like you could do whatever. And like that, like when we did Ship Hits the Fan, we started to get like listeners and fans who like didn't care about video games, didn't know anything about Rooster Teeth. They were just really into like ship stuff, and so that was fun. Like, just a whole separate fan base. That was really cool. The one time I did, I wouldn't say get in trouble, but caused a stir in larger Rooster Teeth, was it was when I was writing for The No, and and I have a journalism background. Like, I came out of like newspapers. That's what I did for years and years and years. And so I got a tip, and this was 6 or 7 years ago, about GTA 6, from someone, and I'm not going to say who still, but like, they had inside info as to what it was looking like at the time. And it was like, I forget what, but it was like, you know, it was codenamed Project Americas, and you're going to be doing drug missions from the US to Central South America and all this. So I was like, great. Got the person to confirm who they were, typed up the script. We put out the video, and no one believed us at the time, or it was kind of, the audience was kind of like, I don't know. You're full, you know, kind of like you're full of shit or whatever. Rockstar flipped out.
Oh,
like,
wow.
They locked down the studio to find wow. the leaker. And a vice president of Rockstar called me and was like, he's Whoa. Very nice, but he wanted to know, you know, who my source was. And
well,
I was
you
like,
can't do that. Yeah.
Fuck yeah. I was like, look, man, I cannot, like, I don't know how, like, games journalism, but like, I'm from like newspaper, like, I'm never gonna tell you he was like, that's fine, you know, just wanted to, you know, and you know, got off. And it was like Rooster Teeth, you know, it had caused a deal. Like, nobody ever said like, hey, you shouldn't have done that, but it was like, it definitely caused waves that we had put that out. And to her credit, Ashley, my boss at the time was like, no, that's fine. This, we're doing our jobs. Like,
yeah,
so you were. It was a really fun memory though at the time. And then sort of later on when GTA 6 finally kind of came, a couple people would bring that video up and that made me feel good. They're like, you guys had it.
Yeah, we got to break some news through the know, huh? That Dark Souls 3 thing was pretty cool.
That's right. We had the Half-Life 3 story.
Yeah, it's interesting because
that's a legendary one.
So it's one of my favorite stories.
Yeah.
Nearly an identical story came out like a year ago, and everyone treated it like it was a new thing. Which, okay, whatever. It was like 4 year gap, and that's enough to forget. But still, yeah, the reporting we did back then I think was incredibly sound, and not only had just the one source, but we grabbed a bunch of other info to support the thesis. So yeah, I was really proud of that report. And to some degree, that's sort of the modus operandi on our reporting now, is we might grab a headline, but we try to grab as much contextual data to all reinforce a story versus a headline. Anyway, that's a little rant. But yeah, those were really exciting moments. When we reported on like Microsoft trying to buy Konami, heard down the grapevine that like that report actually damaged the deal. That like,
right.
I think one of the parties was like offended that it leaked. So that led to a falling out. Microsoft could have had Konami and all their wonderful games this whole time.
And we blew it. We were the ones that blew it. I'm not at the risk of bringing this down. I'm going to say, because a lot of people, this is something that I don't know that Brian or Lawrence get often, but I get it every single day when I stream. Every single day someone comes to me and says, don't you miss Funhouse? Mm-hmm. Don't you miss Rooster Teeth? So we just told a lot of great stories because we had a lot of great memories at this organization. We really did. I have like obviously have friends for a lifetime there. But there are cons to all the pros, and so you get to hear the people that are listening. You get to hear a lot of the pros. You really do. Yep. I don't ever tell the negative stories because I don't like to tell the negative stories. I don't like to air dirty laundry. I don't want anybody to know any of that shit because it's between me and other people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important that people understand that there is a negative side to this. Cause again, they're going to listen to this podcast and be like, why did you leave? It sounds like the greatest job in the world.
Right.
And there were a lot of negatives specifically for me. I can't speak to Brian or Lawrence's experience as much as mine. But there were a lot of negatives for me. I can say one thing, which is all of the controversies that happened in 2020 surrounding a particular person, for me, that has now colored the entire experience. Mm-hmm. So every video that I see, I'm serious, like this really, truly, for me, it colors my entire experience. I can't really think back and think fondly of these things without thinking about that. It's like, it's weird because it's like I'm not going to say it's trauma, but it's like this very, very small little piece of, I mean, imagine if I had left the company and everything would have been fine. You know, like imagine if I had left, I would have been like, well, I can look back and it was great. Yeah. You know, like, oh, cool. Awesome. You know, like I want everybody to succeed and blah, blah, blah. That's not what I had. So, so I do want people to know that for me personally, there was a major reason that I left. I've documented it publicly already. And for me, there's never a day that I miss it. There's never a day that I'm like, boy, I wish I was back there. Like, no, it's exactly the opposite. I'm glad I escaped, that when I did for me again. And I don't want this to be negative. It's just for me personally.
I agree, Bruce. I left for a reason. I left for a few reasons, but yeah, I understand from the audience's perspective, or even from a fan's perspective, how that feels to hear. It's almost like you wanna know who to direct your anger or resentment towards, or who seemed like a good person on camera but secretly isn't. The truth is, though, if we talk, like, what's the purpose of even talking about that stuff? It's gonna make us look bad. Yeah. It's gonna make you feel bad, and Bruce, I was traumatized, and I hope that's not too dramatic, but I only say that because it actually took me a while to get over it. And once that started to fade, then more normal emotional processes and feelings started to take hold. So it's been a process for sure. The way I was treated and certain interpersonal conflicts have left have left a mark on me, and certainly they intrude their way when I'm taking a shower often. It is what it is. Yeah. I think we all agree. We had some once in a lifetime experiences, and there was a price to be paid for that too.
Yeah, that's right. And again, Lawrence and I we work together on a daily basis. Brian, I have no idea what happened.
You know? I was just in a closet typing away the whole time. Yeah, it was, I, you know, everybody has their own experiences. And I do think, you know, to y'all's point, it's still a job. And even a fun job, I remember Jon Stewart talking about this one time about The Daily Show. He said people always would come up to him and, I'll bet that's so much fun. I guess y'all just hanging out all day. And he was like, no, it's actually really structured the way we, yeah, you know, go about this. And I, you know, if you're on the outside, you don't see that, and you don't need to. That's not, you don't need to see all that. That's our job. To your point, Bruce, yeah, there's no point in talking about anything because all it does is stir up drama. Yeah. It doesn't need to be stirred up. It hurts people's feelings. It creates sort of chaos when there doesn't need to be. And I think, you know, I think sometimes on the internet, it feels people maybe want to see justice or, you know, the bad guys get theirs. And life's not like that.
That's right.
I don't mean that in a condescending way.
No, it's not. It's just not.
I mean that with somebody with a little dirt under their fingernails and just having lived life. It's just, yeah, it doesn't work like that. And so it's, you know, yeah, but every job, there's going to be good times and bad. There's going to be, you know, stuff that goes on that is not great. And, you know, it just, it is what it is. I try to look back on it as just, yeah, remember the good things, definitely met a lot of great people. But, you know, as y'all also said, I am also confident that people are going to go on and make their own things.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't, yeah, at least I think it has gotten easier to do that on your own nowadays. Not easy, but there's I think fewer gatekeepers. I mean, there's still some, obviously, but I do like, and I hope it can get more democratized where, you know, creative people can do their own thing without having to have this corporate structure around them, which I feel like only hinders things. Mm-hmm. I rarely, if ever, helps things get made.
If I can offer some condolences to the audience, what used to really bother me and fuel a lot of my spite and bitterness was to see people that, well, for one, for my work to empower people that I fundamentally did not agree with or had personal conflicts with, it was utterly vexing to me that I generated wealth for certain people. Mm-hmm. And then also to see other people continue to be on camera and celebrated and talked about when I knew otherwise about their personality. Most of those situations have resolved themselves. So you don't have to like worry too much about things from here because I'm not bitter or mad about it anymore. So hopefully you, the audience member that wants to hang on to the good memories you have, I can give you 98% validation that they're probably accurate.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, but what about the two?
Don't worry about the two.
That's right.
Yeah. Speaking, Brian, you mentioned the corporate structure and I think that's pretty topical. Given the trajectory of a lot of companies that Bruce and I have worked for, that you worked for, and you come from traditional journalism, so this is a whole thing. Our good buddy, ex-coworker Joel Rubin, wrote a Medium piece that made the rounds, very topical, very prescient, I think, about the practicalities of the content creator economy, in the sense that it's unlikely, given the, in a way, the democratization, like you said, Brian, the vast breadth of content creation, it's unlikely that any one group or individual or even groups of groups or groups of individuals will ever, in as an independent unit, be worth a line item on a corporate ledger. It just won't scale up like that. It won't be a friend's, unless you're Mr. Beast, and Mr. Beast is his own industry already. Yes. So what happens there? Like, is there any future where there can be, you know, like a channel executive? Does that layer exist? Can it exist for YouTube outside of YouTube? Obviously, YouTube has a lot of those executive positions. So does Twitch. But yeah, it seems like the creator economy is kind of settling into maybe what we have right now, which is a, you know, collection of creatives who work and are okay with passable, passable revenues. But we make it work. We find our business and we settle into it. So I don't know. That's so in the Medium piece, Joel suggests that it requires a more traditional education to work into and convert the existing network system. We've obviously chosen the independent route to, you know, kind of build it ourselves. I don't know that we'll ever want an executive over us telling us what to do. That seems a little silly, but maybe at some point, or we'll become those executives telling channels under us what to do. What do y'all think about the trajectory of online content now that Rooster Teeth couldn't make it work?
Brian?
I think so much of Rooster Teeth was such a big part of its era of the internet. And I not a bad thing at all. I don't know if there's going to be, you know, it's like multi-channel networks and things like that. I think those are going away because, you know, people can support, you know, creators and who are like on an individual basis. So I think that is good. However, it's like those creators are still on YouTube and Twitch and sort of these big corporate platforms. So it's like you still have to kind of answer to somebody in some ways. So while I think it's gotten more atomized, there's still, you know, I am wary of just a few giant companies kind of running everything. And you know, and I definitely remember the kind of older internet when it was, you go visit a bunch of different, you know, boards related to interests you had, or, you know, it felt like I visited a lot more websites every day, and now I visit three every day. You know, it's like Reddit has eaten up all the BBSs, and,
right.
You know, and online video, it's kind of one or two. So that's concerning because I did kind of enjoy, you know, little online communities, and they had their own, you know, kind of language and culture, and I really liked that. So I don't know where it's going. I'm not smart enough to know, but it seems like sort of simultaneously decentralized, but also very centralized in other ways.
I think the relationship is changing. So before it used to be, they would employ, like these large companies would employ people, and then they would work and make original content year round. It'd be 24/7 all the time. Right. But that large company owned all of that content. And they owned this person for 5 years and whatever they made. The relationship has changed. Twitch and YouTube, they don't own the stuff. They say they don't own the stuff. They probably, you know, who knows what they would do. But generally speaking, they generally don't own you. You're an independent contractor to them. And that is good that the relationship is separating a little bit. It's good that we're separating a little further out than before when it was just employee-employer. Now we're in the independent contractor phase. And to Brian's point, I completely agree, Brian. I don't like that Amazon or Google controls these platforms. But unfortunately, they're the ones that have the money that are supporting what we do.
Yep.
Hopefully, in the future, that will even split off further to where maybe, let's just say, Lawrence can have his own website with all of his hosted video, and he's paying for it all. And it'll probably go through AWS, Amazon, but at least he only has to pay AWS, and everything else is directly supported to Lawrence. You know, who knows? Maybe that's kind of where we are going. It's like siloing off even further. To me, that is good. But I do think there's less of a chance of creative groups coming together. This is something that I've noticed over the last 4 or 5 years of independently creating content. Is there were a few times that I was like, boy, it'd be really cool if like we could just get this group together and make content once a week or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I probably reached out, you know, I don't know, 10, 15 times to a bunch of other people just randomly just to see what, just to gauge their temperature. Every single one of them was like, I'm good doing what I do. And yeah. I'm good staying alone. Like I can make content with other people or I could do it alone. And everybody stuck to that. There haven't been many new groups that have popped up in the last few years because of that specific condition of the environment and the industry. So I don't know that we're going to see many more groups popping up any more like that. At least not right now, maybe in the future.
Yeah, it's, I think about, when I think about this, I think about it in terms of like pure logistics and math, which is that the audience doesn't discern the output of a group as being orders of magnitude more valuable to watch. I mean, you have your premiere, you have your like ultra premium stuff like Shogun, and that stuff is still kind of made under a very traditional system. But the layer we're at, people are a lot less choosy about the production values of things, and even to some degree about the vibrancy of thought that goes into some content. So it's like we were talking before, there's a lot of beautiful creative vibrancy that comes out of five people that are creatively compatible in a room kind of punching each other's ideas up. And I guess there's still a place for that, but yeah, it seems like in the creator space, not so much. It's more the comforting white noise, and one person can make that pretty easily.
Yeah, it's weird. Sorry, go ahead, Brian.
Oh, yeah, there is a magic in a, it's a whatever, 1 + 1 = 10 versus, you know, just like a, so because, you know, if you're on the same creative wavelength or you have a similar sensibility and sense of humor and you get around other people, like then you just start riffing and it becomes mm-hmm. yeah, it's fun. And it is something very different. Not necessarily better, but different than just, yeah, a solo thing. And I don't know, but I do think a lot of it is a product of, yeah, creators can, I think, take a bigger share of the money they are making now. And so you can be solo and, you know, earn a living whereas you couldn't before. And that is one thing I like about the sort of current state, as opposed to, you know, back in the day when it was like, if you were a musician, you had to sign a terrible record deal and they kept everything and right. you were sort of in servitude. And I think that's how the industry, the entertainment industry worked for sort of, you know, forever. And not saying it still doesn't, but it is not, you know, I think people can kind of rise up a little bit easier now. But by the same token, you know, a lot of people who seem kind of, you know, if you're organic, there's sometimes some corporate muscle behind them that you don't really see. So, but yeah, it's, I don't know where I was going. The group thing. I like that too. It's like, you know, like an improv group or something. They're just having fun and seeing where it takes you. And it's very organic and it can be very magical.
Absolutely. That's why Bruce and I started up Inside Games and
that's right.
brought you this thing. And hopefully we can work with more people in the future. Who knows? I think we all find this work very gratifying unto itself. So I'm excited and thankful to be where I am, working with you fine gentlemen and the rest of our teams and friends. And thank you, the audience, for continuing to hang out with us and enjoy whatever tumbles out of our brains. Bruce and Brian, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And thanks for having me on this.
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
Anytime. Always good to hear from Brian. We got to come up with a really punchy, like a catchphrase, a name for you, some kind of motto.
Oh, I like
maybe
that.
Like a whip crack.
I'll work on that.
Oh, yeah.